Hi, it's Chris Titley here as part of the Sub 11 Uncovered series. I'm joined by Ben Pullen in person here in Brizzy. Ben, thanks so much for being part of this series.
Thanks for having me. Great to be here.
Ben, you are the founder and CEO of Outposter. Do you want to give the listeners out there a little bit of an understanding of what Outposter is and how it began, the early days?
Yeah, look, Outposter is a managed outsource agency where we provide the recruitment services and ongoing management of offshore staff for businesses around the world. But obviously, we're located in Australia, so we tend to hit out here pretty well. This all started, my background's actually in telecoms. So some people may know the previous brand called Vaya Mobile, Fire Mobile, which was part of our advertising. So I exited that in 2015 to Amaysim. And then prior to that, I had one starter, which I exited to Truefone. So the continuity or the continuous thread running through those is we always had an offshore office in Manila, which provided a lot of our back office and customer support, which was a natural step after exiting telco to go and build a business based around that.
Yeah, right. And then from the two exits, you sort of understood, you know, a gap in your own business and then thought, oh, hang on a second, let's take this particular service and open it up to other businesses around the world.
Yeah, and look, it's a well-worn path of people, you know, operating a support center over there and then developing their own outsourcing service. But I think the main difference that we provide or the gap that we look to fill is a managed service. A lot of businesses don't have the time, the skills or the resources to actually manage people offshore. Or, you know, they don't really have or they want help scaling. They don't really have an idea of the culture of the workplace. They don't have any contacts there. So we provide a fully managed service from everything from you know, set and forget right down to we manage KPIs on behalf of clients as well.
So when a customer comes to you and onboard some of your staff, they're employed by you, the payroll goes through you, you're there on the ground, you meet with them, you train them, et cetera, and how do they sort of understand the business that they're working for?
Yeah, so we provide, we are the direct employer. We have an entity in India, about to launch. Yep. We have one in the Philippines. So the staff are directly hired by us. We manage the HR, we do all the nitty-gritty and the legal stuff. You get direct access as a client to those staff as well. But day-to-day, you know, we make sure they're on track, they're supported well, they're looked after in terms of IT, they're looked after in terms of social engagement. So really for you, it's an output-based proposal.
And when Outposter began, I mean, do you remember your first client? Do you remember how you got it and that moment of going, hey, this might be something?
Yeah, I do pretty clearly. It was just after the exit, actually, and people knew that I had an operation over there. And as part of the exit, I was able to maintain that. So just got a few questions from a few mates that were running a local real estate agency and said, hey, look, we're looking for some support. We don't know how to do it. Can you just do it for us? And that was the first one. I went, I wasn't planning it, but sure. And from there, sort of, we've developed now and servicing well in excess of sort of 50, 55 clients here in Australia alone.
And what sort of services do you provide and what's the sort of the main roles that Outposter provide to your clients?
Look, we're pretty agnostic in terms of roles. We've hired pretty broadly. So we have our core team on the ground, which are all subject matter experts, if you will, in certain areas. So we have people that are experts in finance and financial support services, in telecoms, right through to graphic design and marketing. So as a client, when you come to us, we've got the skill sets internally to pass that on to the staff that you hire. So we've got everything from graphic designers through to animation, mortgage brokers, the whole kit and caboodle. So yeah, right through to civil engineering and mechanical drafting.
3 years ago, or 4 years ago actually, almost to the day, we started having these lockdowns for the COVID pandemic, as it was known and continues to sort of in dribs and drabs around the world. There's still people still talking about COVID, but it's sort of March in 2020 when that all happened, and companies started to work remotely and they started to be distributed around and starting to understand they didn't have to come to the office. You know, 4 years today, how do you think that's changed in terms of the future of work and how has that sort of played into your hands?
Well, I remember, you know, when the lockdowns first started happening, you know, we had obviously problems operationally on the ground in the Philippines as well as here, and working from home was not a really a known concept at the time. Mm. You had some people that had their RDOs on a Friday every now and then, and that was right. about it, right? Everyone knew exactly what it was, right? Yeah. You're probably at the beach answering an email every now and then.
Yeah.
But I think
or a Monday morning.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think now it's probably provided some evidence around productivity working from home. Our company Outpost, we are 100% work from home in the Philippines, and that's been a big investment on our part in terms of trialing different pieces of software and hardware. Obviously, we operate with sensitive data from time to time as well. So making sure that we've got our I's dotted and our T's crossed in terms of security and engagement, then, yeah, it's been a big thing. And I think it's not going away. Mm. And I think, you know, the best talent votes with their feet. And if people want to work from home, I think you either lean into it or lean against it. But whichever way you go, you probably get what you deserve.
When it comes to Manila as a location that you've chosen, and you've obviously had previous dealings there when people are working from home, how do you go about sort of getting them together or being part of a community over there with the people that actually work for you?
That's a good point. I mean, that's one thing that we really focus on. So we're not just in Manila. Obviously, when COVID hit over there, Manila's a city of, you know, 14, 15 million people. Everyone sort of went back home, if you will, to the provinces.
Yep.
And stayed there during the pandemic, not to be part of a large metropolis during a global pandemic.
Yep.
So we operate right across the whole archipelago and even internationally outside of that as well. So we make and invest quite a lot of time and money into bringing our team together, either once a quarter or twice a year, depending on the year, and really throw a big party and have a great event. We do workshops and we really make as an enjoyable time to get together as possible. And we think, you know, although people aren't always alone when they're working from home, it's good to be able to connect with your colleagues too.
Yep. And when it comes to company size that deals with you and the idea around using someone or hiring someone offshore, you know, the mindset around, you know, is there a particular stage that you think that they should start doing that, or what sort of the clientele that you have?
Wow. The sooner the better.
Yeah.
No, but in all seriousness, though, I think it's something that it's easier to grow with than rather implant later on because your processes and your organization grows differently. You tend to hire better, both domestically and internationally, when you do it early, simply because you know that the process that you're going to be building from the start. So, and you don't cause any ill feelings in the existing employees either. I think the earlier the better, and as long as it's the direction that you've agreed to go in and everyone's on board with it, it works, to be honest. If everyone's on board with it, it always works, yeah.
Yeah, and the education around the option to hire locally versus remotely, I mean, how do businesses think about it and go, oh, maybe I should hire someone offshore? Is there some sort of process in and around that trigger thought for you to potentially get in front of them as well?
Well, there's three reasons, right, that I always see that people choose to do it. The first one is scaling. Right, so if you're a startup and you've just received a large investment sum, you want to make that go as far as possible. So there's a value piece.
Yep.
Secondly, there's a skill shortage, as we know in a lot of Western markets currently in terms of labor. So it's accessing skills that you wouldn't normally get. And the third thing is operational flexibility and support. So where it might be outside of certain hours domestically, you might need to provide overnight support and that sort of thing, where it works with time zone imbalances there as well.
Yeah, and so is the 24/7 thing a thing, or is it still?
Let's keep using Manila. Let's use Manila for example. You know, there's just over 2 million people in the area. They're hired in the outsourcing industry.
2 million.
Just over 2 million people.
Wow.
Just in that one industry sector, the BPO sector.
Yep.
So the largest part of that market is servicing the US, which is actually a graveyard shift. Right, so depending on the time zone, you're looking at midnight to 9 a.m. in the morning, right, working. So it's appealing as when you're younger, but as you get older in the industry, it's probably less and less appealing as you're going to have a family.
Yep.
And there's also a premium salary price charge for those services as well. So with the Australian shift, it kind of works well. It's a 6 a.m. to 4 p.m. shift.
Yep.
So we tend to get a lot of more of experienced people coming through.
And in regards to the skill set and the sort of like-for-like education and the processes of and the screening and vetting process, how do you go about that?
I mean, that's a big one, especially when you're working from home too, because a lot of the time we'll have people working for us for a couple of months before we even get to meet them face-to-face, right?
Yes.
I'm sure that's not unusual, but it's a big thing for us. It's something that we spend a lot of time with. we actually have three sets of interviews, and one of them is usually with myself or another director based here in Australia.
Yep.
Before we bring everyone on board, and there's a full set of police checks and reference checks done as well.
In regards to the feedback that you get from your customers and sort of the innovation and product development and also the different roles, et cetera, have you got some feedback from people, and can you talk about the stickiness of the product with your customers?
Yeah. I mean, look, it is sticky. When it works, right? And as I said, if everyone's moving in the one direction, it always works.
Yes.
The feedback's been fantastic so far. We've, as I said, operating across a number of different industries, so it's hard to gauge what the pure results are.
Yep, true.
But the pure results, for the way that I look at it, is what are the clients saying back to me?
Yes.
And if they're happy, then, you know, and they're growing, more importantly. So what we tend to see is people dip their toe in the water with 1 to 3 staff.
Yep.
Right? It's a small amount of resource, small amount of risk. And then once they see it works, it generally always grows from there.
And in regards to being based in Brisbane here yourself, you don't find that too much of an issue. Obviously, you are a remote global player anyway, right?
Yeah, so. I mean, yeah. Remote work wasn't too unusual for us because we were used to a lot of Zoom calls pre-pandemic as well.
Yeah.
Brisbane's good because I like the closer proximity to our friends in Asia.
Mm.
Shaves an hour or two off the flights.
Yeah, and we've seen a bit of a softening in the investment landscape from a startup point of view. Has that affected anything, or is the businesses that are on your books, you know, generally more traditional businesses?
Both. Yep. So speaking probably to the first part of your question around the startup space, we are seeing people come from that sector a lot more, only because they're being more savvy with their dollar, right?
Yeah, okay. Yep.
So if you look at it from that way, when things are good, we grow. When things are bad, we grow.
Yep.
Right? Yep. So in a tighter market, people do tend to be a lot more savvy around how they stretch that dollar as far as they can.
When it comes to technology, I mean, you've got the video conferencing, and you've got chat channels. Is that sort of how you communicate, or how clients communicate with their employees in real time?
Yeah, so Slack's probably the most popular platform, unsurprisingly. And we love and use that ourselves, but we've invested quite significantly in the last 12 to 18 months developing our own proprietary software.
Right. Okay.
And so that's everything from the big piece of what we do is recruitment, right? So a client comes to us and says, hey, I need someone to do X, Y, Z. You're like, cool.
Mm.
We take that out to market if we don't have them already on the books. Sometimes we already have someone that we keep in a talent pool that we can assign to you pretty quickly. And if we don't, we go to market. So we've automated a lot of that process now, from people applying to being placed with you, and then ongoing management as well. So it's an all-in-one system that we're building to be basically the backbone of our whole business.
You've got two sides, obviously. You've got the talent and also the customers. How are you managing that side of things? How do you balance the books?
We serve two masters. And it's someone's handy once, it's never wise to serve two masters. But look, we work just as hard for our staff as we do for our clients. So regarding back to that talent pool, you know, we come across some really great people who might be with us for a project for a client. And rather than letting them go back off into the ether to go back into maybe freelance work, we always like to directly employ them if they're willing to, and then we actively search for roles for them as well.
Right, okay. So there's a bit of a holding cost there, but the reward in terms of your competition, et cetera.
Well, that's right. And we can go to our existing base of clients and say, hey, look, you know, we've got Chris Titley, who's really great behind a microphone. Would you like to employ him?
Who? you're a serial entrepreneur. You've had two exits now. This is one of your newest ventures, which is going very, very well. What's some sort of piece of advice that you can give to aspiring entrepreneurs, or even ones out there at the moment that are seeing it pretty tough?
There's a lot, but one that I always like to share is, you know, in business you generally got about three key metrics, so three sets of numbers, and you don't know them always from day one, and they might evolve over time as well, but I always have them written up somewhere, like on a whiteboard, or I draw them on the window of my office. And, you know, every month I look at what we're doing and what decisions have we made to hit those numbers. And if those numbers should be based on, if we hit all of those, our business is heading in the right direction. Kind of think of it like a ready reckoning if you're sailing.
Yes. Yeah,
right?
Yep.
Right? So you look, every time you have
Otherwise
to make a decision.
Otherwise you start deviating away.
That's right. Yeah. Yep. So every time you make a decision, just look back at those numbers and think, is this decision going to help me get to those targets or not?
So is it a short-term goal, or is it a monthly goal?
It really depends, right? I call it more of a health check of the business, right?
Yep.
Some people can get too caught up in sales and forget about the product you're actually trying to deliver.
Yep.
And conversely, some people get caught up in the product. So I like to develop numbers around, you know, what does our product look like? What does our offering look like? And what's our commercials look like?
Do you have a big, hairy, audacious goal up there somewhere, or is that sort of a step-by-step process?
No, I've never been... I don't know. I've never been goal driven like that. I just like sinking my teeth into something, and you know, I feel really passionate about the work that we do because it makes such an impact on both sides of the coin. Mm. Again, the two masters we serve. I really once I sort of lock into a focus, and it just sort of comes naturally after that.
One final question: Do you sort of stop and reflect every now and then, or do you just go, no, I'll just keep going forward?
I do. I'd be lying if I said I do, but I don't like to be trapped in the past, or you know, consider that your high watermark, or consider that your starting point. I think it's the journey is it, without sounding like a cliche. As long as you're enjoying what you're doing, and don't get me wrong, there's some days where you feel like burning it all to the ground. And that's quite natural, especially in the entrepreneur stages. But generally, yeah, I'm one that goes on gut feeling and instinct.
Ben, thanks so much for having a chat today and sort of giving us the story of yourself as well as Outpost, and congratulations on what you've achieved with the business thus far, and obviously a big bright future ahead, and looking forward to catching up again.
Hey, thanks so much. Really appreciate it.